Thank you, Mr. Helwig. Good afternoon, everybody. The title today is Learning by Following. Learning by Following. What do we think of when we hear the word authority? Do we tend to jump back a little bit? When I was a boy, I remember a policeman walking down our street one day. Oh, I was scared stiff. I stood at attention. Today we see the police treated differently on the television, in the news. Who do we think of when we think of authoritative figures? Parents? Teachers? World leaders? Ministers? When I was in the Army, Sergeant was the figure of authority, and he meant business. When this nation was founded, our forefathers established authority for the land under what they called the separation of power. Well, now we've added the word power to authority. They had three divisions. The first was the Senate, the Congress, and then the executive branch. Nowadays, as we see, there's actually a fourth branch that's kind of been established, and that's our court system. I remember studying history and being told that it was a man named John Marshall who saw to that. He did things to set that up. Of course, there's a difference between leadership and power and authority, is there not? Dictionary.com defines authority as the right and power to command, enforce laws, and to judge. To command, to judge, and to enforce laws. So it's combining three different things. Let's turn to Romans 13. So dictionary.com is saying, in essence, that in order to have the authority, you have to have the power. Let's see what God says. Romans, the 13th chapter, please. We'll look at the first four verses. And Paul says something here that's really quite astounding. We've all read this before, but it's a powerful statement. In verse 1, he says, "Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God." And the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Now, we can look on that in a lot of different ways. He says, "Whoever resists authority resists the ordinance of God. Those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of authority? Do what is good, and you'll have praise for the same. For he is God's minister to you for good, but if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. He is God's minister and avenger to execute wrath on all who practice evil." Well, that's what we would want, I'm sure, is that the authority would be righteous authority. But the point of all that for me was that all authority comes from God. He says so. The root of the word authority, if you think about it, is author. That's the Latin root. The Latin word for author, for authority, is author. Authority comes from creation. When I was a boy, I had a paper route. And one of my customers, my dad knew him quite well, lived about four blocks from my house, and this guy would invent all kinds of stuff. You know, I think he was retired, as I recall. He wasn't young. But when I'd go to collect the money for delivering the papers, I'd knock on the front door, and if he wasn't there, I'd go out to the garage because I knew he'd be back there, where he had all kinds of things that he was inventing. And he'd show them to me, and they did marvelous things that I was astounded at how he thought, because it was beyond what I would think. Now, if he invented something, he had the right, did he not, to collect any money that would be available from selling it as creator of it. Same is true with a book. I mean, if you write a book, you get what's called a copyright. And then when you sell the various issues of the book, you get the money from that. The same is true with music. We have to be careful in our music department that we pay for the music that we use and we don't reprint it so that the people don't get their money. Authority, therefore, is authorship. Actually, if you look in the American Heritage Dictionary, the definition for creator and author are the same. If you create something, you have the right. And that's where God places his claim. God created us physically now, but he's in the process of creating us as spiritual beings. Therefore, he says he has the right to guide and direct us. And that makes sense. Let's look at Romans 9. Romans 9. And we'll read two verses, verses 20 and 21. Romans 9, verse 20 says, "But indeed, O man, who are you to reply against God? Will the thing formed say to him who formed it, 'Why have you made me like this?' Does not the potter have power over the clay? From the same lump to make one vessel for honor and another for dishonor. God gave us our life, he gave us our body, and he gave us our spirit, and now he's given us his spirit. The potter can do what he wants to with his clay." Remember that the name Adam meant dirt or clay. God formed Adam out of the clay. Same elements that are in the ground, same elements we plant a seed in, just arranged differently, arranged miraculously. David said we're marvelously made. Many of us, when we hear the word authority, tend to recoil, some cower, depending on the authority. I've heard the term knee-jerk reaction. I keep going back to this Mr. Morrison's four-part sermon on the human condition. We have to remember that no authority can equal chaos. I consider a lot of the Old West. You know, we used in the 50s, when I was a kid, we had a lot of Westerns on TV. Oh, and guys like Matt Dillon, they were really keeping the order out there. And what was the other one? Wyatt Earp. He was really keeping order. But the fact is, I think that even if they did in these small towns, that there was a lot of chaos where they didn't exist. I think that many people have experienced the wrong use of authority, and that's where the defiance to authority or the wanting no authority comes from. Let's take a look at Exodus 20. Recall in the beginning I mentioned that the dictionary associates power to enforce with authority. God doesn't tell us that he's got the power. Remember Mr. Armstrong saying a lot of times, he'd say, God doesn't want to create robots. He doesn't want to make us do stuff. He wants to turn us into something that's really good. But the fact of the matter is, he says he has the right to do that, but he's not going to use his power. And he has more power, certainly, than anybody. If we look at Exodus 20, and we'll look at verse number 1 in Exodus 20. He says, God spoke these words, saying, I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. In other words, he's saying, you were slaves, and I made you free. And that was quite a lengthy process, recall. But it's a statement of ownership. You look at verse 3, it says, you shall have no other gods before me. Drop down to verse 11. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and all that's in them, and he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and he hallowed it. He says, he made us, he made everything. We sang about that in the very first song today. It was a song about God's creation, how he made everything. We sit in our kitchen, we watch bunnies, we watch chipmunks run around, we watch beautiful birds of every color. Donna puts seeds out, that's why. Sometimes we watch a hawk coming after the birds. But the fact is, there are things that we can't see that are just amazing. When the DNA molecule was taken apart recently, the guy who was in charge of the project, whose name I don't remember, stated that there was more information in one DNA molecule than there is in the Encyclopedia Britannica. God's creation is marvelous. He made it. He has authorship. just like that inventor when I was a paper boy. The problem is, as I mentioned, that often we've seen authority misused or abused due to what I call a human condition. Let's look at Matthew 20. We need to learn to respect authority before we are qualified to exercise it. Hence, learning by following, which was the title today. We need to learn to respect authority before we're qualified to exercise it. Matthew 20, verse 25, and we'll read four verses here. Jesus called them to himself and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them." To me, this runs right into what Mr. Morrison talked about in the human condition. "Yet it shall not be so among you, but whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant." And then he says something astounding. This is Jesus Christ speaking. He says, "Whoever desires to be first among you," that would be number one to me, "let him be your slave." Slaves don't get paid, you know. They do stuff, they work, and they don't get paid for it. "Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many." The world has one way of authority, or one thought for which authority is regarding, but Jesus said it shouldn't be so among us. Among us. Let's drop back to Matthew 7. We can't learn this naturally. We know that. I mean, naturally we follow the invisible influence that influences every human being. We don't even know it's there. I remember one day I was standing here talking about a house with Mr. Morrison, and the lady wanted me to list it for sale, but she had also told me it was full of ghosts. And I was suggesting to him, I said, "You think I should get involved with this?" He laughed. He says, "They're all around us." And they are. I mean, these are the ones who are trying to influence us in the wrong way. Matthew 7, verse 28. "And so it was when Jesus ended these sayings that the people were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes." Jesus Christ had total authority. He's given authority in Matthew 28. But he was the greatest servant of all times. He had the authority that was given by him by the Father, yet he was the greatest servant of all. Let's go one chapter forward to Matthew 8, and we'll look at something here that I think is very interesting. Matthew 8, I mentioned earlier that when I was in the army, I knew what authority was. Well, we read about that here. Matthew 8, we'll start in verse 5 and read through verse 13. Matthew 8, verse 5. "When Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him, pleading with him, saying, 'Lord, my servant is lying home paralyzed, dreadfully tormented.' Jesus said to him, 'I'll come and I'll heal him.' The centurion answered him and said, 'Lord, I'm not worthy that you should come under my roof, but only speak the word and my servant will be healed. For I am also a man under authority, having soldiers under me. I say to them, go, and he goes. Another one, I say, come, and he comes. And to my servant, do this, and he does it.' When Jesus heard this, he marveled, and he said to those who followed, 'Assuredly, I say to you, I have not found such great faith even in Israel. I say to you, as many will come from the east and west and sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven, the sons of the kingdom will be cast into outer darkness.'" He says in verse 13, to the centurion, "Go your way, for as you believe, let it be done." And the servant was healed that very hour. Why would Jesus say in verse 10, "I have not found such faith, not even in Israel"? The centurion is talking about understanding authority. Why didn't Jesus Christ say, "I've never seen such understanding of authority"? Why did he say faith? The reason is that authority isn't so much about whom we are over, but rather about to whom we are willing to submit. Hence again the title, Learning by Following. The centurion had others over him, and he understood that Jesus Christ had the Father over him. And he understood that he had been given the right by the Father to heal his servant. That is an amazing understanding, because of course, God is invisible, is he? Jesus Christ has submitted to the Father eternally and happily. Centurion said, I also am a man under authority, learning by following. Authority has a lot to do with faith. Faith is being able to see the invisible authority without seeing it. Let's look at John chapter 12. Recall in the beginning that we said and we read in Romans that all authority comes from God. And this is what the centurion could see, was that that authority to heal that servant came from God. And Jesus Christ called that faith. We'll look at John 12, verse 49. We'll read a couple of verses dealing with this, because this is something that this is something that comes up quite often. And Jesus reminds us time and again. We'll look at verse 49 of John 12. He says, I have not spoken on my own authority, but the Father who sent me gave me a command what I should say and what I should speak. And I know that his command is everlasting life. Therefore, whatever I speak, just as the Father told me, so I speak. Jesus always submitted to the Father. Jesus' ministry was 3.5 years. He wasn't a great orator. That wasn't the point. Those around him were astounded because he spoke as though he had authority, because he did. It was given to him by the Father. Let's look at John 5, back up a couple chapters. And we read the same concept again in verse 30 of John 5. John 5, verse 30. Jesus says, I can of myself do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is righteous, because I don't seek my own will, but the will of the Father who sent me. There's another number of times when he says this very same thought, the thought being that he is following the one who has sent him. It wasn't some kind of a false humility thing. Jesus is clearly stating that the power came from the authority who sent him and what he told him to say. He would speak the words and people were healed. Remember when he sent the 12 out? And he said, you can heal people, you can raise people from the dead. They came back, they were all excited. They said, we even cast out demons. Well, you know, they didn't do that. I mean, people don't do that stuff, you know. Let's look at Luke 4. Now, the same episode that we're going to read here, you can read in Matthew 4. The reason that I chose Luke is because of the way it's worded. And what we see here is actually two considerations as far as the concept of authority is concerned. Let's start in verse 5. We'll read four verses. Luke 4, verse 5, and this is the situation where Jesus, just before his ministry began, had fasted for 40 days and now was being tempted. And I always have suspected that Satan was allowed to give him everything that he could. I don't know that, but I'm suspicious that he was turned loose. In verse 5, he says, the devil, taking him to a high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. I don't know exactly how he did that, but it says he did it. The devil said to him, all this authority I'll give to you and their glory, for this has been delivered to me. And he spoke accurately, didn't he? Which is to say, the devil knew that authority was given to him by somebody. And I can give it to anybody I want to. Okay. Verse 7. Therefore, if you will worship me, all will be yours. Jesus answered and said, get behind me, Satan, for it's written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve. There's two things here. Number one, Jesus didn't argue, and he didn't say that authority wasn't given to you. But the thing that we also have to realize is that what the devil was trying to do was take the authority from God the Father. He was trying to ask Jesus Christ, who worshiped God the Father, to worship him, which the Father says, you don't want to do that. Satan was trying to take God's authority from him. God made the angels, didn't he? Made everything. If that's the case, the angels don't take precedence over God. Even this authority had to be given by God, had to be given to the one that was then called Satan at one time or another. All authority, remember, that we read earlier, is given, revoked, or allowed by God. Let's turn to 1 Samuel, because we know this example, of course, but when you add up the time that it takes place, I was really amazed to see this 1 Samuel. And what we're going to look at is that David understood this. David understood this. Saul did not. And we read a simple verse in 1 Samuel, the 23rd chapter. David knew that Saul's authority was given to him by God. Now, Saul knew that David was anointed. You'll recall at one point he told Jonathan, "Don't you know that you're not going to be the king if David lives?" 1 Samuel 23, verse 7. Saul was told that David had gone to whatever that is, a city, Keilah. So Saul said, "God has delivered him into my hand, for he shut himself in by entering a town that has gates and bars." Now, obviously, that wasn't true. Saul didn't understand this, but the point I'm making is that though Saul was trying to kill David, David respected what God had given Saul for 12 long years. 12 years. 12 years he ran from Saul. There are many examples in the Bible where people took authority that wasn't given to them. And I chose this example and I thought I wished I hadn't chosen it. Recall Moses striking the rock. And I say that because Moses was called the friend of God. He did everything, so many things that were very good. The one time he made that mistake, consider Korah. I've read that Korah was Moses' cousin. And he tried to take authority from Moses that wasn't given to him. And some of his family followed. I know that some didn't, because later we see that Psalms are written by the sons of Korah. But he tried to take the authority from Moses and paid for it with his life. There's all kinds of power grabbing, of course, that goes on the earth today. We see this in the news. You look at these nations where there's been one dictator upon another, and you see the results of not living God's way. Recently we see that the Ukraine and the resort island of Crimea were a very desirable thing in the eyes of some others who said, "We want these for ourselves." Satan was the epitome of someone who tried to take authority that wasn't given to him. The result was that he was thrown down to earth. We have to make the decisions every day whether we want to follow the ones who are over us. Let's look at 2 Peter, please. "When we submit to God properly, brethren, he will rescue us from those who would overwhelm us otherwise with the improper use of authority. And if he doesn't, that's his decision." That can be tough sometimes. In 2 Peter, you look at 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 9, and we'll read through 11. We read that, "Then the Lord," verse 9 of 2 Peter 2, "then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations and to reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment." Verse 10 says, "Especially those who walk according to the flesh and the lust of uncleanness and despise authority. They're presumptuous, self-willed, and not afraid to speak evil of dignitaries. Whereas angels who are greater in power and might do not bring a reviling accusation against them before the Lord." And turn to Jude. Not very far to turn. The angels know that that's not something that they should be doing. And Jude will read verses 8, 9, and 10. "Likewise, these dreamers defile the flesh, breaking right into the thought, reject authority, speak evil of dignitaries." Verse 9 of Jude. "Yet Michael the archangel, in contending with the devil, when he disputed about the body of Moses, dared not bring a reviling accusation against him, but said, 'The Lord rebuke you.' But these speak evil of dignitaries," in verse 10, whatever they do not know, and whatever they know naturally, like brute beasts, and in such things they corrupt themselves." Michael knew who had created the angels, and he knew that it wasn't him. He wasn't the author of the angels. Even if the angels had themselves behaved in a wrong fashion, Michael knew that it had to be God who was going to condemn him if he was going to be condemned. When I look back over the years, And I've seen how many times the church itself has split. You know, I'm not pointing a finger at anybody, but what I'm suggesting is that I think that most of the time it was that it's tougher to learn by following than it is to want to be the one who leads. It's just that part of that natural human condition that Satan puts in our head. If Michael had condemned Satan himself, he'd have put himself in the same position that Satan had put himself in. Of all the individuals who are present in our lives, Satan is perhaps the most extreme, without a doubt. Yet Michael would not. Just one more thought. The Bible is the word of the Creator. The Creator. He's the author. It says so in 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy 3, I think it's verse 16, says in essence that this book is God-breathed. And that's the severe translation. It says inspired, but the more accurate is that God has literally written every word. Now, I understand that we translate. You know, we translate into English and we add various pronouns, we add various conjunctions, we add verbs that might have not been there. And there's been some deliberate mistranslations. I mean, let's look at 2 Corinthians 13. But the book itself, as it was written by the author. Was written by the author and the creator of everything. 2 Corinthians chapter 13. It's important to understand where God stands. Chapter 13 of 2 Corinthians, the 10th verse, he says, therefore, Paul writes, I write these things being absent, lest being present I should use sharpness according to the authority which the Lord has given me for the edification, not for destruction. And that's my point. Whatever authority we're given in the church, whoever's given the authority, it's always for the building up. You look at 1 Corinthians, the 12th chapter, and it talks about gifts of the Spirit, spiritual gifts. We have all been given something different. I mean, there's people with various talents. There's people who are great at encouraging. There's others who are very faithful. There's others who are great at comforting people. Others who are great at greeting people. These are spiritual gifts and talents that God has given us. But if you look at verse 25 in that 12th chapter, they're all given for the same reason. And that's for the unity of the body. The building up of the body of Christ, which is a very good thing. Paul was saying that he was given authority by God not to destroy but to edify. You read the book of 1 Corinthians and it's very correcting. He's correcting these people but for their benefit, for their benefit. We can't follow the Bible, the Word of God, perfectly. As I mentioned, there's some translations that were done on purpose. In spite of the warnings that God gave about changing. In 1 John 5, for example, we see something that implies that God is a Trinity. We know that that's manufactured. In Acts, the 12th chapter, the word Easter is in some translations. But it's a direct mistranslation of the word Paschal, which is Passover. We, brethren, have to learn to use authority in a way that causes others to respect and to want to follow it. That's learning by following. God has the power, but He consistently says that He has the right. He doesn't use that power. When He speaks to the parents, He tells them they have the right to lead their children. Authority is never intended to be a lording it over situation. We see world leaders doing that, but we know what Spirit guides them. The gifts of God are not just some talent that makes us great. These are for the edification and the building up of the body of Christ. God gives us capabilities and authority for the edification and building up of everyone. We've all been given different gifts. The world has its idea of what authority is. We also have ideas of how to respond to it. They do, I'm sorry. As I mentioned earlier, how the police are recently viewed. When we understand, brethren, when we come to understand totally the right use of authority and submitting to it, then will result in a blessing to us. And you know, one day everybody's going to understand that. And when that happens, it's going to result in a blessing for all mankind.